Good evening, everyone. This week, we talk about the United States, and to some degree, the rest of the world, too. I promise, though, this is our last episode about health insurance and delivery systems, although hopefully you've been finding them interesting anyway. So why did I save the US for last? It's where I live, so you'd maybe think it would be the first country I cover in my show, but the United States is real complicated, with elements of all of the systems we've talked about so far. So let's talk about how that happened. A little over 100 years ago, the US barely even had insurance, private or public. But like in many other places, as medical care improved, the costs of it also increased, and health insurance became a necessity. One of the earliest insurance plans was in 1929, when some school teachers contracted with Baylor University Hospital. They set up a contract that they were allowed 21 days of hospital care per year, in exchange for 50 cents a month. Many similar contracts were soon set up across the country, especially during the Depression era. So then how did the government start to get more involved? We'll start with veterans. The first government agency to provide medical care to veterans was actually created all the way back in 1812. These early agencies just provided room and board for disabled veterans, but by the 1900s they were essentially equivalent to hospitals in terms of care. By 1930, all veteran services were consolidated into the Veterans Administration. From there, veterans' hospitals were expanded greatly and became affiliated with local medical schools. Since these hospitals were all fully government-run and owned, this is kind of like a tiny beverage model, like the Brits put into place. Of course, these hospitals are only for use by veterans, but today that still covers about 10 million Americans. A small part of the country, but nonetheless significant. Let's expand that coverage further, though, using the Bismarck model. If you'll recall, that was first set up in Germany, where the government mandated that companies provide health insurance to their workers. Here in the US, a similar-ish system was put into place in the 1940s. While the government didn't outright require companies to provide healthcare, they made it so basically all companies did. During World War II, wage and price controls prevented companies from making their salaries higher and using that to attract new workers. However, companies were allowed to offer fringe benefits, like health insurance, and later on, companies were allowed to deduct the cost of employee health insurance from their taxes. So basically, every company started doing it, because it made financial sense to do so. After the war, this practice only spread further. If you live in the United States, you probably know all that already, because that's how most Americans still get our health insurance. About 50% of the US today is still covered by employer-sponsored insurance, a kind of Bismarck model light. But what about those who are unemployed or retired? Numerous administrations saw this as an issue, including those of Franklin Roosevelt, Harry Truman, and John F. Kennedy, spanning across several decades. Despite continually ballooning healthcare costs, the proposals were decried as socialist and were opposed by physicians, hospitals, and insurers, which you should certainly have expected if you've been paying any attention to these last few episodes. After JFK's assassination, Lyndon B. Johnson pushed for an expansion of Social Security, so that the elderly would have government-provided health insurance, paid into with an income tax. It's hard to say exactly why, but this time the bill was met with much less resistance and was passed into law in 1965. This law created Medicare and Medicaid, which are programs that provide health insurance for the elderly and the poor, respectively, by taxing incomes of Americans. If you'll recall, that's basically the Canadian National Health Insurance model, just applied to certain small segments of the population, and with less dramatic backstory. Both of these programs are still providing health insurance to tons of Americans, with Medicare today covering about 20% of Americans, and Medicaid covering about another 20% of Americans. Alright, so if you've been doing the math, we've thus far provided healthcare or health insurance to about 90% of Americans, through veterans' hospitals, employer-provided health insurance, or government-provided health insurance. But what about the last 10%? Some of them may buy insurance on their own, but many simply do not have health insurance coverage, which is why some 25 million Americans still don't have health insurance today. These people pay out of pocket for any medical costs, meaning if they see a doctor, which many of them simply avoid doing, they pay for everything themselves, which gets very expensive very quickly. And even among Americans who do have health insurance, many health insurance plans are still inadequate, as medical bills have become incredibly high and insurance has not quite adjusted to compensate. In other poorer countries, without established national healthcare systems, this is the norm, where the rich are able to get medical care and everyone else struggles to do so. The United States isn't quite that bad, but definitely still suffers some of those issues. Accordingly, the United States sees about 500,000 bankruptcies a year related to medical bills, and studies from the late 2000s found that around 20 to 40,000 Americans each year die because they lack health insurance. America proportionally spends more than any other country on healthcare, and yet our people aren't as healthy as other wealthy countries. It's sad, and I hope that by explaining a little bit about how health insurance systems can work, I can spread understanding of what a mess our system is. I've tried to repeatedly say in each episode about health insurance or delivery systems that there are pros and cons to each. Bismarck, Beveridge, or National Insurance are all viable, reasonable ways to deliver healthcare to your people. For some governments that don't have the resources, they simply don't have a national healthcare delivery system of any sort, which of course makes access to care harder, but at the very least is pretty cheap. The United States, through a mix of history and coincidence, has decided to adopt all three systems for different parts of the population and leave everyone else to their own devices, which has yielded a bizarre, expensive, and ineffective mess. It's a lose-lose for everyone involved, and frankly, it's kind of silly. I don't know what the future of health insurance will be, either here in the US or abroad. The different models we've discussed continue to work fine in numerous countries around the world, and if I had to guess, I assume that as more countries become wealthy, we'll see more national health systems crop up internationally. I hope, though, that I've illustrated for you the different options available, how they came to be, and some of the pros and cons. As always, thanks for listening, and thanks to Jojo Tang for editing, Angie Lee for our cover art, and Muse Open for this music. If you enjoy the show, or don't, please let me know why with the links in the show notes. I would deeply appreciate your feedback, good or bad. Next week, we'll finally move on from national health systems or health insurance systems and talk about international health cooperation.